What is up, gentlemen?
What's going on? Just balling.
Dude, we got the big timer here today.
My shot's up.
We got the big wig.
Who?
Mr. Keely Flood.
What's up, Keely?
Taking over LinkedIn by storm with his sales knowledge and prowess. And it's just his wildly effective way of teaching sales.
I've been told it's pretty simple. Which I take as a major compliment.
It is.
That's the goal.
Hey, clear is the new creative. So
yes, simple. I'm a simple-minded individual myself. I need to make it simple to get the content out there. So
dare I say the Forrest Gump of recruiting sales coaches? No, I'm kidding. No.
It's a great line. Simple as a simple does, right? Like that's. Yeah. It's a classic.
I just felt like selling. Yeah. We're going there. Yeah, we're going there. No, man, it's good to have you back on here. It's been it's Good Friday here. Not actual Good Friday. It's a Good Friday in that it's 75 degrees in Columbus, Ohio. Thank goodness. I'm
going
to go get
none of that going on.
Trying to work on my tan at some point today. So that's good. Guys came and mowed the lawn because I haven't had time to do it. So it had to be done, guys. I know you could pull my man card, whatever you got to do, but it had to get done.
If I could turn the camera around, we could all pull. I guess we'll be pulling multiple man cards then, apparently. Yeah. So it's all good.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good. All right. Well, moving on. Keely, what's going on with you?
I'll be mowing the lawn later.
So. There it is. That's why Keely's the top dog. Right.
Well, I mean, I had a boss a long time ago. I remember him saying like one of the best investments he ever made was having someone mow his lawn. He's like, it's the best thing. He's like, it frees up my time. Blah blah blah. And gosh, it's 5 years now since I moved into my house here. And I was like, oh, it's going to be so great to mow the lawn. That first summer was great. Every summer since then, I've hated it. I was like, I don't want to do this.
Brutal. It doesn't help that I'm allergic to grass. So that doesn't really help a ton. It's my worst allergy.
Oh, okay.
But go figure. I had to go to the – I had a LinkedIn post a couple years ago because I was mowing the lawn at the farmhouse I used to live in before I moved in with my wife. And the grass got so long because our lawnmower is broken for like – the first 4 weeks of the season, and then it just got crazy. I mean, we're talking like a foot and a half high, and I went through and it got so bad that I had to go to the ER. Like I was like, my throat was closing up and like everything else, like my eyes were swollen shut. I was like driving to like the urgent care like this for, you know, 3 minutes down the road. So it wasn't that long, but it was like, I looked like Will Smith in Hitch. I posted about it a couple years ago, but yeah, that was an interesting moment. So I get a little bit of a reprieve from it.
Okay. Anyway. So I get my best thinking done. I got a big lawn. So
moving forward, topic today, we're going to cover sales. We're going to cover because Keely's here, but even what it's like to kind of run a sales desk and all that stuff, part of it, right? Start conversations like this, build rapport. Maybe not always talk about the weather with your clients and your prospects, but you know, kind of be able to have, how do you figure out how to stay on point, but be casual, but still kind of lock down recs and close deals, right? Like it's kind of finding that whole balance. We're going to cover that and want to kind of get Keely's background working at Medex and staffing, kind of what the day-to-day was like. I'm going to share kind of my experience at Aerotech. Again, these are two really big companies. Aerotech's one of the largest companies, staffing companies there is. Medex was a spinoff from guys that started at Aerotech, right, Keely?
Yeah.
Like a lot of the same training fundamentals. And what I think we've all seen as coaches is so many recruiters and salespeople didn't actually get the training that we did at these firms. It's just like, here's a LinkedIn recruiter seat. Here's a job description. Like, go find me a candidate. And in all that, and some people, you know, a lot of you guys have figured it out, have made money, but there's also nice to kind of have that structure and like, hey, what does work and what works for, what are the big companies doing? And, you know, there can be a lot of problems with those bigger firms, but one thing they do right is kind of the training and the KPIs because they have to, they have to kind of figure out uniform, kind of what works. They've spent all the money and have all the data. And so we're going to kind of pass that on today. Of like, here's kind of what works and how to put it into action. So you're on time, Kevin.
I'm on time. Always on time.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But never there when you call.
Random sales story, because that just reminded me of something, actually, was that, because we're on the topic of sales, was I was taught if there's like a distraction like that, the best thing to do is draw attention to it, not to ignore it, because your brain then is just thinking about it, right? You got to bring it. Like, hey, you got to take that. If there's a phone call, hey, is there anything important? You got to take that. I can wait a minute. No worries, right? Because it forces whoever you're meeting with to either say yes, and then they go and do what they need to do. Or if they say no, they forget about it, right? The not addressing it, then their mind's somewhere else thinking like, who's that called me, or they have to deal with this, and they're not paying attention to what you have to say.
Yeah.
And that was actually taught to me by a magician that we brought in for a sales kickoff. So weird lesson there for you, but it stuck with me 8 years later now that I learned that.
All right. Hold the phone.
That's not a day in the life, though.
They brought in a magician for sales training?
For sales kickoff. Yeah, we did like... 3 days worth. You know, you had all these speakers come in. One of them was a magician. He was the fun act, right? But he was also, you know, because you had some guys that came in that were like really intense, right? Your standard sales kickoff type speakers. But this magician, he was brought in for like the fun part, but he talked about, as a magician's supposed to do, right? To get people's attention, to get them to focus on what he's saying and what he wants you to look at and talk, you know, all that stuff. Meanwhile, he's doing some other tricks and things. It was if I remember correctly, he was able to like read someone's mind, you know, something like that, with like a newspaper, and there was this little tidbit about distractions and bringing attention. So of all the speakers, him and the guy that runs Navarro are clearly rated now were the two that I still remember years later.
It's memorable takeaways. Yeah. So That's what counts. Before we get going, you know, if you're listening, if you're in the chat, you know, let us know, how's your week go? What sales questions do you have for Keely? What's going on? Any wins for the week? Throw them in the chat if you're feeling up for it. Let's dive into it. All right, so sales. Keely, what was like a typical day in the life, or say week in the life, for you at Medic? From a, how many meetings did you have to set? How many were new meetings? How many recruiters were reporting to you or kind of within your division? I guess what was your focus in terms of selling and kind of your vertical?
Yeah. So I guess I could just start on Monday and work my way from there, right?
Yeah.
And some people tell you, like, you know, your week starts Sunday night. Like, that's cool and all. I agree with that. But if you have four kids and stuff, maybe it doesn't start Sunday night. So like, don't beat yourself up if you're not that guy getting up at 6 a.m. doing ice baths. So there's that. But Monday morning, I mean, in every actually weekday, we had, and you call it what, Red Zone, Clark?
Yeah, we call it Red Zone. Yeah.
Yeah. You get together 8, 1, and 4 to review your job orders, right? Where they're at, where the recruiters are at on them. So that way you can give updates to your hiring managers. You can give updates to the candidates, right? Like, it's my job to get feedback as an account manager. And if we're going to the board, we're on day like 3 after an interview and I still don't have anything, my recruiters are looking at me being like, hey, what's this guy doing? Right. Go give me feedback.
Think about that. And I might stop all, cause there's going to be a lot of good stuff here to dive into. We're probably going to do this often. That's why we have an hour, but think about that. If you're listening, how many times do you check with your recruiting team a day on roles, right? That's 3 times that Medic said we did it twice. And it was always, I gotta be honest, but at a certain point I set my meetings purposely so I wouldn't be there at some point, if we're all being honest. And if anyone from the Aerotech office is listed at that work, that, you know, you did the same thing too. But that's 3 times a day. So by Monday morning to Wednesday afternoon, that's 9 meetings that if you didn't get, because the Red Zone or the Fast Track for you, those are recs that you're like, this is going to close. Right, like this wasn't like a nice to have. You had a start date, Keely, top 3 skill sets, location, pay, interview process, times, manager, all dialed in. Like,
yep.
This is like the stamp of approval, Keely Flood, Clark Wilcox. Like, this rec is going to close in this time range. And so if you didn't get feedback for 9 meetings, you had to say still waiting. Like, what did that do to you? Right? Or like what did that inspire in you? Yeah.
It crushed my soul. First thing I would start. And then my recruiters would continue to stomp on it afterwards. But it was, I mean, humbling is probably a good word, right? Because at that point, when it comes to like the feedback, because we were responsible as a sales team to handle the client relationship. And so the recruiter up until that point did a great job, right? They got a candidate they liked on paper that they brought in, that they interviewed, right? They did their, I guess, hard work has been done. Now it's my job. And if I'm going that long without feedback, it means I either did a really poor job setting expectations during the rec qualification process, or I missed something in terms of like what they want from a candidate, because maybe they're not getting back because they're just not a good candidate anymore. But regardless, it just was not a very fun feeling, to say the least, going up to the board over and over again. And I even backtracked what you said too about that board. I mean, you had to, everything had to be buttoned up to even get on the board. If you didn't have things like pay, bill rate approved, right, the top three skill sets, start date, like you weren't allowed to put it up there, which meant recruiters weren't going to work on it, right? Because the recruiters, yes, you work together, but they also kind of had the power to work on what they wanted at times too. And if you have a terrible rec that doesn't isn't qualified properly, why would they spend their time on it? They'd rather work on some other salesperson's rec that checks all the boxes and has the highest probability of closing.
So it's the balance of, and for those that don't know, like medics and aerotech, they run split desk. So there's a salesperson, the recruiter, you know, but like for us, the commission, we only got it on the sales side. I couldn't get full 360 commission. So there was really no point in me actually recruiting. You really had to get the team, the recruiting team, to invest in you and your roles and everything. So there's that whole dynamic. So if you had no rezones, it's like, well, why don't you have any? And if you have ones that don't close, it's like, right, you get like the walk of shame or the wreck of shame in a sense. So, but you had to get on the board. And I think that is the, it's, I mean, it's so beautiful looking back on it. Like, to align the incentives and to kind of put that pressure on. It's also why a lot of people flamed out quick. And it, because it's just there. And I had it easy. I know at the Aerotech LA office, and it was tough, but it wasn't anything like, I think, for you in Chicago or New York or East Coast, like, or how even they did it in the 90s or 2000s. Like, that was a whole different era of, like, just, and I've heard some stuff about Robert Half, the way they have people, like, in the circle. And, like, it was a whole thing. But that's what makes us, that's what made us have to get better. Because I know for you, it wasn't easy getting off to start and a good start in sales. And it was, I got my butt kicked the first year, year and a half.
Yeah, walking to the board with nothing to, nothing, like literally nothing. Yeah. No job orders to talk about. You go through every other account manager stuff and you get down to Keeley and I'm just standing there, hands behind my back, just going, I got some promising meetings this week. Like, there's no orders to work on.
Dude, I remember one, and for those that don't, like, we have a win column, a loss column. So win, obviously, you make the placement. A loss, you lose out to competition or internal. Then we had the third column, the wash column. I don't know what you called it, Keeley, but we had the wash column, and it was the recs that just disappeared, and they were never heard from again. It pulled the budget, or, well, we're not really that urgent. Maybe we'll hire next year. And I was like the stab to the heart, because that, as a manager, as a sales manager, you did not qualify the business. Like, if you couldn't figure out that this was not going to close ahead of time, you really messed up. And I remember one time, like, the beginning, I think I had to put like five of those tags in the wash column, because it was all like, I was like, oh, I got one company, five roles. Like, I'm going to make it look stacked on the board. And then they went in the wash and I was like, oh no. And they're just sitting. I remember my tags. It was a blue and red tag. I had the Patriots colors, and it was just like sitting in there for like weeks until she took them down. I was like, this is the worst.
Yeah. They made it stay up. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
It had to stay on the board till the following Monday when we got to erase it. So, like, if it washed on Tuesday the prior week, everyone saw that red W next to the rec for the entire time up until it got, like, you'd love to just go up and erase yourself right then and there. Mm-hmm. But no, you put the little this and the little red W next to it, and it stays up there for days. So every time you go to the board, everyone gets to see it.
So PTSD thinking about it. But it made me way better. Like, I had to get better at those fundamentals, and I'm sure you did too. Because, I mean, you've talked about it. Like, how long did it take for you to kind of really get your foothold in the sales?
Yeah, I mean, 18 months to, like, feel even somewhat confident, 29 months to hit my first President's Club, right? Hell, in the first 6 months, I mean, maybe a couple of clients tops. And, like, one of them, my first role I ever got was – a summer intern. It was like this summer intern at a company called Namera. Like, and I was like, I was happy as can be. I was like, please give me that. And then I went a while without getting anything. And my first like real account breaker that I did on my own was for like a one-off. It was for like an auto parts store, which we didn't even do. But my boss was like nice enough and knew that I was desperate. He's like, sure, go ahead and give it a try. And the person we placed there lasted 5 hours and they got fired. And that was the end of that account too.
Yeah, a lot of those in the beginning, just the most random stuff. They're trying to keep you on point to your top skill sets. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, but I could also place this like person that can wash a tank or whatever. It's like, what? Like, no, you find
tank cleaners. We had those roles. Yeah,
they clean tank cleaners. Yeah. It's all that stuff. So again, it's humbling, and I want us to share that because I get a lot of people that start a company or they come from corporate recruiting. I'm going to start an agency because how hard can it be and all that? And I get it. There's a lot of agency recruiters that don't make this industry look very good, but it doesn't mean it's easy to do it. It's just easy to start saying that you're a recruiter, but it is really hard to find that success and to be at that level. And if someone like Keely, you had to go on how many meetings per week?
8 to 10 is what they're told. 8 to 10.
So you said 18 months. So that's what? 10 meetings. That's hundreds of meetings, almost 1,000 meetings before like it started to really click. So like really think about that, right? If you're sitting there trying to be like, okay, this market's tough and everything else, like what are you really doing to get those 10 meetings? Right? And you had the healthcare scientific vertical, right?
Yeah, started in healthcare and then moved to the science do the selling side of things. So it was a humbling experience because the territory itself was, healthcare was great. Medics was great. At that point, that's what the Chicago healthcare unit was the founding unit, like the literal first unit that ever existed in medics. Chicago Science came around a decade later in 2010. And when I joined in 2016, it was the worst one in the Chicago office. And I think the worst one in the entire country in the scientific division. I mean, we had nothing. We had 3 sales reps and maybe 5K a week in spread as a total unit. And 4 of which was with this guy named Alex. So it was, it was bare bones.
So rough. I mean, starting from basically scratch, you got to get 10 meetings a week. You don't get recruiting commission. So you got to convince recruiters to work on your stuff. And how many of those, did you have any direct reports?
Yeah, 3 or 4 usually. Start off with, you know, you start off with like 1 when you're in sales, if you're even lucky to have that, because they just want you to get the job. But as you start to grow your book of business, you get more recruiters working under you, you know, under you.
And how, to get those 10 meetings, how, what was the activity level like? Calls, emails, in person?
Yeah, we had bullhorn. So we tracked a variety of like metrics from like emails, cold calls, not so much LinkedIn back then, you know, in 2016 wasn't as, I would say, important as is now, but the expectation was you're making at least 40 dials a day. Your activities had to be over, I think it was 300 by the end of the week. So a mixture of calls and emails, and then the meetings themselves too, plus like follow-ups and then orders too. That was a big one later on, right? Not in the beginning, they're not going to say like, hey, bring in 5 orders this week on week 1. But as time goes on, yeah, the expectation was you're bringing in a couple orders a week.
Yeah. That's pretty similar. 10 to 15 for us. I think 5 new meetings was always the goal.
Sure.
And I was joking with an ex-Aerotech colleague earlier today. It's like those meetings that you set on a Thursday night, like, hey, when I'm gonna bring donuts tomorrow morning to a client, they give you like 1 wreck the last 6 months. And but you got 4 managers there that you like.
Yeah.
It's like meeting. Okay, yeah. hit my 10 for the week. You know, you get a couple of weeks of those. All that stuff. It's a grind. And then you got to convince the recruiters to work on your stuff. Kevin, I know you've kind of just been, you know, take it all in hearing us staffing guys just talk shop. But I mean, you've done RPO, you were at Amazon. I mean, what were, I guess Amazon, you weren't really like, you don't have to like sell as much, but like, I guess kind of like thoughts, kind of your take and input on kind of just the day-to-day activity it takes just to get business up and running, right? And kind of get people to entrust you to pay you for recruiting.
Yeah. So I'm more headhunter than even I'd say RPO. I don't think RPO would do a good job saying what I do. I'll say I'm more mercenary in the way that I work. So in terms of the sales piece, I mean, it's full circle. So it's, you know, it always starts with the research piece. As I always say, I use empathy as my best research tool, trying to figure out what problems I need to solve for people. You know, there's a lot you can glean from people's LinkedIn profiles, and there's a lot you can infer. And then once you've had enough conversations with enough people in these initial calls, you can assume a lot of things about how that conversation's going to go. And I'll get to the point, but in doing so, you can, you know, the whole point of the sales process is to intrigue somebody enough with your skill set and what you can do to have a conversation, right? Because then, you know, with your skill set, your knowledge base, your wisdom, you'll handle the rest within that call. And so, you know, I'll say the majority of my sales process is trying to figure out what are those little pieces that will intrigue somebody to want to hop on a call with me. And, you know, different from the staffing piece, you know, I'm more so looking for these individual organizations that I've researched that have these roles open because they've been open for this long or whatever the case is. I think that's still kind of the process you guys use where you'll reach out to your hiring manager saying, but that's more so my sales process as a headhunter than maybe staffing or direct hire.
Gotcha. And is most of your stuff been LinkedIn? I mean, obviously we connect on LinkedIn. I know we do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn together. Is it been LinkedIn focused? Is it typically like email, like calls? Like how do you initially get their attention typically?
Yeah. No, so because I'm in the blockchain space, everybody is highly decentralized, and I'm looking for people globally. So I'm looking for organizations and agencies in Europe and in South America as well. So to that point, no, I literally the last candidate that I placed last week was a protocol engineer, and just as a for instance, and in how decentralized you know the talent is, I found him. Because I was on Quora and I searched on Quora for a question that I would think somebody with this expertise would solve. Went through that, found this gentleman, connected that to his GitHub, found a Git he did, connected that to his LinkedIn, saw he was exactly who I needed to talk to, and then was able to kind of, you know, send that message and find who they were. A lot of times that's how I find my hiring managers I want to work with too. A lot of times, so I work with startups, Series A to D normally, people that don't have hiring already solved, right? They don't have a team, so they need somebody like me to come in and make it happen. And then oftentimes a blockchain, they're hard to fill roles. So I try to use that knowledge base of understanding to find them. So to that point, I find people on my last client, I found them on Twitter Spaces. So they were talking about their product on Twitter Spaces, thought it was really cool, sent them a message, and then we started our kind of conversation that way. But I find people on Twitter Spaces, Quora, Reddit, on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is my main place, but because my talent is highly decentralized, there are so many places where people are where I have to find them.
I love you talked about just getting creative in how you set meetings, whether it's clients or with candidates. Keely, what did that look like for you at MedX, right? Because in terms of getting creative in setting meetings, like how did you go about setting, especially those first few weeks? Like, how did you go about it? Like, how do you approach certain accounts? What did you say to the manager in terms of like what should incentivize them to meet with you? Like, what was that process like? Just getting that first week of 8 to 10 meetings?
Like the very beginning? Like,
yeah.
Like when I didn't know what I was doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Because here's your inspiration. So, Grant, message, incredible first year with 100 placements made. Grant, that's awesome. And so he's moving over to BD and wants success there. So if that helps give context a little bit too. Okay. Like if someone like Grant, right, is like starting out, like how do you go about and start setting meetings?
So I would, especially if you're transitioning from recruiter to sales, and if you're in the same industry, I do have to clarify that, right? Because I, for better or for worse, I recruited in healthcare and then I moved to science. So all the knowledge I built up about the healthcare rev cycle space, billers, collectors, coders, all this stuff. I moved to science and I didn't even know what QA meant, which is quality assurance. It's one of the departments I was supposed to target. Didn't even know what that meant. I just had to like figure it out on the fly. And one of the things that a great boss named Dan Dumroff, he taught me early on, he's like, look, don't go for VPs or directors, call like leads, call candidates and talk to them and learn from them. And then use that information to leverage into getting meetings with their bosses. Maybe not by their name, right? But if they're telling you, if you're talking to a candidate and he's saying like, oh, I'm thinking about making a change because the company's just going through a growth phase right now. I don't see where I fit in the future. It's like, oh, great, growth phase. It means they're hiring, right? And then he might say like, well, there's this problem, or whatever it is. Like, okay, I'm gonna use that information and use it in my outreach as well. I would say early on, my outreach was probably terrible because I didn't know what I was doing, right? I was just calling people up saying like, hey, I'm Keely. I'm new to my role. I'm trying to figure out this industry. This is who we are. And I think I could help, right? Did I get a lot of meetings? No. Like, I also made sure I shadowed, though, the other two sales reps who had been selling in science for a couple of years. I went on all their meetings, everyone I could. So, hey, can I come with you? And then when I had my meetings, I brought them with as well. Yeah. Because I still remember it was at a place called Now Food, sitting down with a microbiology manager. And I had no clue what he was talking about. And the sales rep's name was Anthony. I like turned to him and I gave him like the look of like, you know, like the eye bug. Like, I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And he just jump in. He had to like take over because I didn't know. He's talking about microbiology terms like that. I had no idea what they meant. And I felt like an idiot. And so I had him save me. And that was really, honestly, that was my first 6 months was like that. And it wasn't until the same guy I mentioned, that Dan Dumroff, I went on a meeting with him and he taught me, look, stop trying to be as smart as they are in these meetings because you're not going to be as smart as a microbiologist. This guy's got 20 years of experience. He's a PhD. You're a religion degree who coached college football and is 6 months into selling science. Like, how do you think you're ever going to be at his level? He's like, but guess what? He doesn't know anything about employment. And you can spend your days learning about that and educating him and letting him see why he's having a trouble. Why is he struggling to fill his microbiology role, right? He doesn't know. He just knows he's not getting good candidates. But if you could tell him why and educate him about that, and show how if he looks at, you know, this industry or thinks about this different way of interviewing people, shortening the cycle, whatever it is, right? There's a lot of ways you can get them to see things differently. That is a value add. And that in their eyes, like raises your authority. And they're looking at you as someone who knows what they're talking about. You might not, probably don't know crap about my microbiology, but he doesn't care. You know a lot about helping him find these roles and fill them. And that's what he needs right now. And those are really, really impactful thing for me. Really at the 6 month mark. Like I remember the parking lot where he's standing, like he talked me through it. Cause he ran the whole meeting. He's just like, look, you sit there, you don't say a word. I'm gonna run it for you. And I remember walking out and be like, we didn't talk anything about my biology. Like we nothing. He's like, yeah, but who cares? And that's the, I guess, education he gave me was around that.
That it's such an important part.
Hey, Keely, you weren't in our call today, but I just want to say you literally just touched on like our recruiting call today. That's literally what a big highlight of our call was. So I just want to say that.
It's been a theme of the week because I talked about it with a couple clients yesterday as well. And it's such a key point. We had a client that's training up his team for some SDRs and everything else. Kids, he has them researching the lingo and all that. I'm like, they can do that, but I'm like, stop. Teach them how to be indispensable as a recruiter, not as a air compressor mechanic that I don't know. I can like ask AI or whatever. They have no idea, but like, how can they be invaluable as a recruiter, right? They have the client relationship. They can kind of make the match. They talk to other candidates so they can kind of, you know, there's insights that they have that the candidate doesn't have, just like the candidate knows stuff that they don't know. So stop trying to compete on what they know and start understanding what you bring to the table.
And I just want to say, like, as a recruiter that tried to be the person that knew it all, the people that actually do know it all, they know you're full of shit, just by the way. Like,
yeah,
I know you think you're trying your best to be knowledgeable, but the other side are laughing because they know you're trying way too hard. It's so much easier to just be like, to Michael Tomasello's point, like, hey, I am not an accountant. I am a recruiter that knows the base information for this role. And I'm going to make sure that that's right. But you're probably going to talk over my head when it comes to, right? Like, never.
Exactly.
No, right. You'll just tell them, look, I'm going to ask you some questions. You're going to teach you some things and working together, we'll get this thing fixed. But I need your industry expert knowledge on accounting, just like you need mine on employment. And the two of us putting our heads together can solve this problem. And there's really nothing more powerful in a meeting than just, since we're on the meeting topic, just saying like, hey, I don't understand what that means. Can you help explain it to me a little bit differently? Right. Like I have another story was this woman named Lisa's store, a place called Medela. And after that 6 month meeting with Dan saying, don't be the smartest person in the room. I was like, she was talking about a BOA redlining for a dock control expert at this company. I'm like, whoa, what does that mean? Like, I don't, she's like, no, her exact quote. I still talk to this day. She goes, no shit, you don't know what that means. I don't expect you to either, but I'm just telling you what it is. So you can go out and find me people that have this experience. Yeah. Like, there we go. Right. And that's because I admitted I didn't know what it meant. And it was, she like made a joke out of it. And I felt like a fool for a moment, but it was very.
Aha moment.
It was. It was like, oh yeah, she's right. Like, she didn't kick me out of the office. She didn't say, oh, this guy doesn't, he can't fill my role because he doesn't know what this exact acronym or terminology means. He was actually the one person who said he didn't know what it meant. And that made me feel like, okay, I can trust him because the other people that sat in front of me have tried to be as smart as me. And to Kevin's point, they put their foot in their mouth eventually. Like, eventually your knowledge base will run out. And that's when they see the gap. You might as well admit you don't know it after that point and let them fill in the gaps from there.
Yeah. That's a point that I hope people, I mean, you should write that down if you don't, or make a mental note. Like, that's admitting what you don't know on the front end, right? You knowing what you do know, what you can do, and what you don't know, because your competition agency recruiting is over-promising like crazy and pretending that they know what they're talking about and everything else, and they don't. And when you realize, like, that's the competition you're up against, and then you can go the other way. That's where, I don't, Keely, you started to get great clients. I did as well. Kevin, we're a digital recruiter. Like, that's the big transformation, is like, we can get you momentum with automation and content. And Keely teaches the sales calls on Tuesdays. Kevin's helping me run the recruiting calls on Fridays and is on the content calls. Like, we're teaching people all this stuff every single week in the digital recruiter community. But it's that piece. Like, that's what we can't. That's the turning tide, the turning point everyone has. It's like, that was the best discovery call I had and everything else. And I'm like, why? Because they're like, I asked the right questions. I got them to open up. And it was like two questions. And then they talked for 25 minutes and I found out everything I needed to know. I'm like, there it is. And if you didn't know, like, wait, explain that, explain that. And they're happy to, because you already got them on the right track and they feel it. Right. Because it's already a different experience than other recruiters have given them. So it doesn't take much. But it's still the most important shift to make in sales.
But there's also some like horrible advice out there that goes like this: fake the funk. I really hate that advice.
Oh, because, like fake NPC candidates.
Yeah. Well, just fake like candidates. Like just act like, you know, like just keep it moving. And it's like, no. That's actually not powerful. It's not powerful faking like, you know, and then you don't. And then you're trying to like, you're spending all this extra time after the call trying to figure out what the call meant, when you could have just said, I don't know. and then to Keely's point, because this is what most people are taught to do, you actually saying, I don't know, is that's why that's so powerful. Because again, everybody's coming at them saying they know, and nobody. And then also think about the hiring manager who also didn't take the time to have a thought process. Maybe they actually think that everybody knows and they're like, what is going on? So maybe you're the first person to make them realize that, oh, snap, this whole time, nobody's known what I've been saying. And then you'll be the person to help them recognize. I've had that happen, too.
Yeah. It's the extra 5-10 minutes on a call that way to save hours of time on the back end. When a lot of the time people then wonder why they didn't respond back to your agreement or to your feedback, because you didn't do the right things in the discovery call. So they don't take you seriously. Like, they might not be able to pinpoint it, but they know subconsciously, like, this recruiter didn't ask me the right questions. Like, they're on a wild goose chase. And, like, managers pick up on that, like, more than you think. So, yeah, to Kevin and Keely's point, like, that's why it's so critical. If you know the industry as well, they do. What do they need you for? They don't know what you do as well as you do.
I think
it's good to know. I mean, look, it doesn't hurt. Like, Keely, when you got to know Scientific, when I got to know Skilled Trades better, that didn't hurt us in the sales process. But it was never going to be the first thing we could figure out, and we still had to do our job until then. Right. So it's like, how do you live in the reps and still get wins through your early tough reps? Right, that's kind of the balance. And then I think to Michael's other point, what does fake it till you make it actually work? I think there's levels of it, right? I mean, to me, it's like, if I was a recruiter that, you know, to Grant made 100 placements this first year, I probably made around the same, and we all made placements. It's like, lean on that. lean on your knowledge of the candidates, of the market, of the skill set. I know, Keely, you had to switch new industries. I'm sure you said you talked to candidates first. More people at that lower level to kind of get to know, like, build your confidence up that way. Don't go after VP C-level right away because they're going to wipe the floor with you, right? Get there people that appreciate, that are okay talking to a recruiter, that appreciate someone actually giving a crap about what they have to say and their thoughts on things and all that. Like, that's how you build it up. I think it's the level of people that you go to. And then you can become more ambitious with your targeting as you get more reps and more experience would be my thought. But
I think a couple things too, like you, as you learn your industry too, and again, you're never going to learn it to the level that they know it, but it allows you just to ask better questions, right? And great answers come from great questions. If you ask a dumb question, you're going to get a dumb answer, right? Like,
I have a specific situation for that. I'm currently hiring for, and I can talk about them, Brother International, the printer organization. And I've been with them for 6 months. And it's in that 6 months of talking with candidates that they wanted for their channel program. They want a senior channel partner, right? And as they describe it, and it sounds like it's a sales role. But because I understand the industry, I understand manufacturing, and I understand kind of the IT resellers, the distribution part of it, it's different than software engineering, or it's different from these other industries that have channel partners. So because I've been here long enough, I know what they're looking for is a marketing channel partner, not a sales channel partner. But in the way they describe it, you wouldn't know, because they're saying lead generation, they're saying sales enablement. So for a recruiter that's fresh, they'd be like, oh, I'm looking for this. And it's only based off me just that more knowledge of digging in more and having been here, that knowing the industry a little more, I'm like, okay, I already know. So those are the kind of just little details where now I don't have to, you know, them, and I can just go in the market, get who they want, and then boom.
You probably even asked, like, hey, just to clarify, is this a marketing or sales role? And like, oh, it's marketing. Boom. You saved yourself days of running in the wrong direction, which, again, early on in your career, for no fault of your own, you're not going to know to ask that question because you don't know your industry. So
exactly.
You only got a great answer because you've learned your industry and you're able to ask a great question.
And for those that are thinking, all right, well, I don't have that on this new role, you can let them know, hey, this is maybe a newer role to us, but we know how to recruit, or I know how to recruit. I know how to attack a search. And what we talked about in the recruiting call, right? I think Samantha brought it up, Kevin. It's just like, you know, this is an iterative process. It's ongoing. I'm not going to probably have asked and covered everything on this call. So I might follow up with a couple emails and questions and stuff like that. Like, and you can do that. I mean, the more you can just say it's a sales or marketing, the better. But sometimes not every search is like that. You're not really ready. Just managing expectations. Like, I can go find the person. If I know exactly, we kind of really figured this out, you can still qualify a really good role, even if it's something you haven't recruited on before. Because those things can be mutually exclusive, right? And so it's just kind of setting that expectation. And you're giving yourself a little bit more goodwill and breathing room with the client and not putting so much pressure on yourself to, like, know everything, right? Because at the end of the day, they still need someone to spend the time sourcing and screening and doing all that.
And to Grant's point, and kind of like we were talking about earlier, I mean, you're their recruiting expert. Again, if they're in front of you, they obviously couldn't solve the problem yet, right? Or they wouldn't be talking to you. So that's your opportunity to show up and prove that you are the recruiting expert. So to Grant's point, I also appreciate that I got the recruiting training first, because it's what made the sales and the marketing piece actually make sense. Because I think go ahead.
I haven't seen any successful salesperson recruiting that didn't start out recruiting. And if that's you and you're listening or watching, let us know in the chat. I've yet to come across anyone that dove right into recruiting sales and had success.
I think that if you ask me, The only difference is, and I go back to, like, because I came from door-to-door sales. I sold Kirby vacuums and AT&T U-verse with an orange shirt going door-to-door. And that's where I got my start. But if you ask me, it's because sales, you know, taught the transactional way, right? Where it's not consultative. It's not putting people first. You actually think that you have to sell somebody because you have something versus solving their problem and being curious and finding out what it is that you're actually solving for them. And I think the recruiting piece really focuses in on this is a people process that will carry over to sales and marketing, where then like just everything starts to just make sense when you have a recruiting base. At least that's how I felt like it came for me coming from Amazon, because I got the people part of it, but I was always missing like the sales marketing. Then when I got that, I was like, oh, this makes complete sense.
There's so many, and most of it's just candidates lie and candidates are fickle and candidates have, there's issues and all this other stuff going on. So like, if you're a salesperson, you're like, oh yeah, I got an agreement. Like I'm the man. Here's 10 agreements. It's like, we all know. What type of client? Do they work with other agencies? Is there competition? Why is the role like all that stuff? Well, I got the agreement signed. Like, go figure it out. Every single recruiter, one of us knows, oh, great, I'm about to waste 6 months of my life, right, if I were to actually do this. And so, like, they just don't have the appreciation of the context, all that. And look, even if you only recruit for 2 to 3 months before you start to sell, I think, because I get people asking me, owners all the time, I'm going to bring in someone from sale, what's their background? Have they recruited before? No, but like they're just going to make a bunch of calls. Well, it is the biggest waste of time I've ever heard of in my life. Can I give a job 6 months later? Do they still work for you? No.
For instance, that I think we'd all feel right when you have recruiting experience, you know who you recognize a little bit more when you have that conversation with them, that person who's about to leverage your offer for their current organization. Right. Or like that's a nuance, like where you can within the conversation, you can kind of tell things because you've had so many of these conversations. And that's where like you save so much time where it's like, yeah, I know what they're looking for. And this ain't it.
Yeah. Well, I could even tell with split partners is, you know, I remember last time I had a guy that was like, oh, we got blazing hot wrecks. Like, could you and Lauren help us out? All right. Sure. I always get a little nervous when someone is that aggressive to start with. But I was like, you know, seemed like a nice enough guy. We get on, yeah, these are exclusive, all that. We're switching over. And this is a red flag. I learned, like, we're gonna be building more of the software play, so we don't want to run the agency day to day and all that stuff. But we got these flaming hot wrecks. I'm like, all right. So we focused on one. And every candidate we talked about, this should be a layup. Everyone's like, oh, I've had three people hit me up about this role. But it turns out 6 months before, everyone got hit up by the other recruiters and all that, who they had to let go. They weren't qualifying their business at all. They weren't pushing through recs the right way or candidates. They were getting run over by their clients. So these candidates, they had burned through the candidate market. So after 2 days, we're like, yeah, we're good. But thanks, but no thanks. And it's taught me two lessons. One, most agencies have terrible rules. They haven't qualified anything. And it's one example. I've seen it time and time again. Number two, the biggest red flag I have for anyone that wants to work with me or us in the digital recruiter is if they don't want to be a part of their agency. If you aren't willing to lead from the front in the meetings and invest your team, it takes so much time to build a successful agency and to build successful people in an agency, right? Like that was just another kind of just a red flag. So if you're kind of thinking, you know, I'm going to maybe go in some meetings or do a little bit of recruiting and do on the side, like I get it if you want to build up on the side because you have a full-time job, but if you think it's just going to be a lifestyle business, like good luck. Even anyone that's doing a lifestyle recruiting business is still working 40 hours a week minimum. I'll just tell you that right now. Lifestyle really only means solo.
Yeah,
and it has its perks, but not what you think.
Yeah, it ain't Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week, that's for sure.
I love that book, man. He convinced me it was.
Oh. Yeah, that 2018 Clark definitely thought it was. That's how I lost a lot of money.
Touche.
Yeah. Four hours of work and 36 hours give my money to everyone else, I guess. But it was, oh man.
I really tried to make that math equation work, though. It was like X plus.
Yeah. Anyway. I was like, I got this. I was like, I had no discernible skills that I was aware of, but I got this. all right. Grant, what does Grant say? Does it help to get micro-focus on geographic area at all or industry if I have experience in multiple markets? I definitely have thoughts on this. My first answer is it depends. You'd have to definitely know more of your whole situation. Yeah. For some people, it can be an amazing way to start. Some people don't need to. Depends on how long. It depends on the industry, the skill sets. You mentioned you made 100 placements. Are you going to be selling in that same industry and all that? Go back to the well where those placements were and start to come up with a sales plan from those placements. That would be my thoughts, Bakili.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think the biggest thing is going to be like situation. If you're starting your own business, you got to start geographical, right? Because you're doing, honestly, if you're starting, not even your own business, right? If you're starting a full desk, you are juggling your two things, one BD and the other fulfillment. And if you're out recruiting candidates all in New York and then you land a client in LA, what are you going to do with your candidates in New York? You're going to find candidates in LA. And by the time you find those candidates, maybe you lost the role, maybe you didn't. But now your candidates in New York, guess what? They found other jobs. Now you're back to zero there. So it's like, you gotta really hone in to, I think, a geographical and industry to start, build things up, get some good clients under your belt. And that allows you to take a few more risks, meaning maybe you expand into another market, maybe you recruit into another market, you try to build up talent pool that way. But until you get some wins under your belt, you're really fighting against, I mean, you're not gonna win. I'll just say it the nicest way possible. You will not win.
And for headhunters out there, okay, because there's other than just direct. I say yes, niche down, own that niche, and then it's so much easier to expand out. As in terms of geographical area. Say what? No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm glad you said that word.
Go ahead. Niche.
Because this is a good one. I had a call. Someone that bought the course, super nice lady. She came from South America. She might be watching and she know who she is if she's listening. But she's trying to figure out her niche and her vertical, and she went through the course and we hopped on a call last week, and she got the pre-sale in December where everyone got a free coaching call as part of buying it. So we finally did our call last week. It's just like, I've been waiting. I've been holding off talking to you because I know you're going to critique my profile. I know you're going to critique my niche and my vertical. And here are the three I came up with. I'm like, okay, like there's nothing wrong with picking those three. I think it was like, you know, FinTech and a couple other ones. But I could tell she wasn't like that excited. She kind of, it was like picking the 10 she had worked on out of a hat. But in her profile, her thing is she has a network she's tapped into because she's from Brazil and speaks Portuguese. And she has companies in the U.S. that have that presence that are looking for Portuguese-speaking candidates to work for them in the U.S. And she has it tapped into that. And that's what her clients want from her and prospects. But she was fighting that. I'm like, that's your niche. That's your vertical. It's not an industry. It's that. That's what people know you for. That's what makes you stand out. That's what makes it a really unique value prop that you can leverage. And there's enough business out there from what you're telling me. Focus on getting that revenue first. And to Keely, your point, you can start taking other risks once you stabilize your foundation from that niche, right? That's how every company started. Aerotech started with placing aerospace engineers. And now they have, I don't know, 5 different branches and divisions and 15 different verticals. But it started with placing aerospace engineers, hence the name Aerotech, right? Medic sounds like the same thing, right? That with the healthcare office right in Chicago. And with every one of these big firms started with one specific sweet spot.
And you know, I like to bring it back to psychology. The reason is, and we talk about this with content, right? You have to build believability with your market. So before they can believe that you can handle anything, you should probably be an expert in something, right? So once you get that, you know, that reputation or you know, you're in the feed and they see that you own mechanical engineering or construction or blockchain or AI, then they're like, oh yeah, of course Kevin can help me with my marketing role because you can do that. So I think that's a lot of it is the psychology of just building believability and confidence with yourself and then with your market is what that is.
Well said. Well said. You'll appreciate Grant said a few minutes ago, but he started life insurance door to door for a decade. Oof.
I did it for 8 years. Frick. Woof. It was good for 4. Before.
I did 11 months and I half-assed it, to be perfectly honest, before I started Aerotech. I hated it. I think I watched more Champions League than I did actually go out door to door. that year. I hated it. So AeroTech was a step up big time for me. Much respect to you guys for hanging on that long.
I never did it myself, so I can't.
No, that's why I had to figure out the digital piece, man. I can't. It just, this stuff burns me out because I'm trying to be more efficient. I want to have quality meetings. So I guess we'll have to wrap this up, but we went on a couple different paths that I'm happy we did. But when did it start to turn for you, Keely, in terms of, okay, I'm just kind of setting whatever meeting, but then you started, you shadowed people, you had better questions, all that. But really, how many meetings, how many weeks? I mean, 18 months is when you got results, but was it like 6 months in, 9 months in, 12 months? When did you just feel like those lead indicators of like, okay, I'm having the right conversations, but it still hadn't like landed yet and spread?
Yeah, that 6 month mark, that Dan Dumroff story of how to sell differently.
Okay.
Is when things started to turn around, because the next 6 months, I mean, I still remember it was March Madness. I was like, I remember running outside. Someone placed from Synergy Flavors called me. We had been targeted. This was in the month 9, I think, maybe 10. It was right before my 1 year mark. And they called me with like 7-8 roles, right? All at once. It's like, oh my God, this is it. And so I went from like 2K to 5K in spread by the 1 year mark. And then the next 6 months from 5K up to 10, and then rode 10K onward to President's Club from that 18 month onward. So it took, I mean, it took a full year and a half to get to the highest level, but 6 months it took where I started to feel like, okay, I'm starting to get this job a little bit. Like I'm starting to understand this thing a little bit better. And it led to better meetings, which led to better business, which led to more closed business, which led to the wins that we all seek.
Really think about that. If you're paying attention, you know, someone like Grant and, you know, Bradley, I know, is doing more sales stuff as well. It's, do the math on 8 to 10 meetings a week for 6 months. And then think about it in the 9 month mark when the roles really come in, and 18 months to get to that President's Club level. I mean, there's a big myth that there's shortcuts that you can take here. And look, we could expedite it. We can get you momentum with automation and content, plus a sound sales foundation that Keely talks about, right? We can get you all that in the program. But whether you're month to month or you're with us for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, think about how long, like, we get you up and running and we can work with you as long as you need to. But in your own, for your own vision and expectations, give yourself minimum 6 months, a year. That's what I tell people. Like, wait, I can't get results in your program with it for 6 months. But no, you'll get results on day one because you're going to learn stuff that you didn't know before or piece together or anything else. You might not, you could make money in month one and month two, right? But you're not really going to fully internalize everything that we're bringing to the table because of what this job is to do at a high level for 6 to 12 months. And now when you get to that point, I mean, you could do this job in your sleep and it gets really good, right? But give yourself that time frame.
Yeah, then things become more second nature, right? It's not learning a new process or new industry. It's you're out executing. You're just out doing the job. And with it becomes more confidence, and more confidence leads to more wins. Yep. It just doesn't happen overnight though. And we all want it to. Like I thought the same thing. I'm like, man, I'm gonna come in, I'm gonna crush it. I got crushed, the opposite, right? Like even with recruiting too. When I was in healthcare, I came in at that point, I'd been 5 years removed from college. I recruited for college football at the D3 level. I'm like, I got this whole recruiting thing. And I got absolutely destroyed, like just humbled to the nth degree. And I realized, oh, wait, there are some things I probably should learn and figure out before I start seeing the success that I had envisioned having.
Yeah, it's my favorite saying. Amateurs look at the right side of the equal sign and professionals pay attention to the left. Process over path. Sorry. Path over result. I think it's more important to pay attention to the process of where you're going. And then I think that where you're going becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, it is. Like, have the foundation, have the process, the system, and keep after it every single day, right? We've had a couple people hit 1 million impressions on one of their posts, like two different ones in the program last week.
Yep.
They kept posting all this week, right? Maybe 5 likes, maybe 15, maybe 20. It wasn't 3,000 or 5,000, they just keep going. They just keep going and keep going, and relentlessness, just that, right? That pleasant persistence that we talk about, Keely, they just keep going, they keep going. No, that's what we do. That's what we're here for. That's why we are all coaches now, and we're all still in the game as well. know, so if you want to book a call and kind of learn more about how you kind of work with all of us within the Digital Recruiter umbrella, right? Scan the QR code, book a call. We can chat about kind of where you're at, what you need your support with. We cover it all: sales, recruiting, tech, content, really putting all the pieces together. And so this job can be a little bit less of a grind, a little bit less friction. You can have answers to the issues you run into sooner, because mentors have impacted every single one of us significantly. Like, it wasn't for my mentors talking to me daily, weekly at Aerotech, no chance. And I know it's the same thing with Keely and Kevin. It's like, you need that. If you don't have that, you owe it to yourself to find one, right? And there's no need to do it the hardest way possible. So wanted to kind of leave
the shortcut
yeah.
to the shortcut.
Oh, hey, Bradley just said it. Yeah.
Well, the shortcut to the shortcut, I think, is to talk to people that have done it before, that you can ask your question that you're curious about when you're in the mix. And I talk about this all the time, right? I think so many of our people are getting these results so quick because they're just using their knowledge and experience from their past. And then things are just making sense.
They're working smart and they're working hard.
That's right.
And like, that's what it is, right? We got the digital piece, we got the recruiter piece, you know, it's all in there. So good stuff, guys. Keely, appreciate you, brother, coming on here. I know we're going to have you on here more going forward, because this was dynamite, as always. You just have a very, like, it's just direct. I would say it's always simple, although, you know, because we're talking about some big stuff here. But I think it's good for people to know and hear what it really takes in that commitment level, because that's gotten lost in translation a little bit in the COVID, post-COVID era, of how hard this job is to do well at a high level.
Yeah.
Consistently. But it can be really worth it.
Yeah.
Consistently at a high level. That's the hardest part.
Consistently. Right? Like, yeah. Over and over and over again. Yeah.
Everyone's got peaks and valleys, but it's the ones that don't let the valleys get.
Well, we didn't talk about those phone calls. We're like, hey, you got to lay off 30 people that we have on the books on a Friday. Well, we didn't even get into that yet. And then you got to do it all over again. So I'm sure we'll be covering that in some future sales calls here and future lives. So,
Boy, cool. Valentine, February 2019 for me. It was Valentine's Day, and I had to lay off 30 people.
Woo!
Yep, that was not a fun Valentine's. My wife was not happy with me that Valentine's Day.
Here's chocolates. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But we'll talk about it another time.
Hey, nobody. I'll just say this: nobody that I've ever met in my life is as gangsta as Amazon, because they don't give two. You know what's, and that's all I'll say. So I hear you.
And we got a topic for another call coming. We're gonna probably have to mix it with a
layoff,
a more uplifting topic as well on that call. But yeah, we'll cover some of the horror stories. And I know the comments
that would be a great call. We should have a horror story call. That would be a fun call.
And will we get some comments on that one for sure?
Yeah.
True.
Well, cool. Well, guys, appreciate you guys commenting. Grant, Bradley, Michael. So we got here. Oh, Tim. Tim said how awesome your name is. He did spell it Keeler, not Keely.
Close enough.
He tried. It's good.
Yeah.
Good job. I mean, with effort.
Yeah. A for effort.
you know, Tim's got so many roles that he's working on now that since he bought the sales course like 2 months ago that he didn't have time to spell check. So that's a true story, by the way. But cool, guys. Well, have a good weekend, everyone out there listening. Appreciate you tuning in, commenting. Y'all have a great weekend as well. We will not be here Monday, or at least I will not be here Monday. I'm out of office Monday, so I'll be back next Friday. But you know, if you guys want to run something, you're welcome to. But I will not be. I'm out of office Monday, so we'll be back next Friday again, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Keely. It was good stuff.
Appreciate you. Bye, y'all. Man. Have a good Friday. Happy Friday, y'all. Bye.